We are starting the section here. We just began it briefly last week, that the Bible proves to be inspired. And we were talking about probabilities. And I want to mention just a couple of things again, just to make sure that you're with me on this. When you're dealing with more than one event, and you want to know the total probability involved, then as you deal with the one aspect and determine the probability, which is, as we mentioned last week, the desired result, and in some cases it can be maybe more than one desired result over the total number of possibilities. And so, as we mentioned, you roll a die and you want a number 5, and so you have one desired result and you have 6 possibilities. So it's 1 chance in 6. Now, if you roll the die twice and you want to come up with 5 both times, or 5 one time and 4 the next, it's still 1/6 the next time. And if you want to find out the total probability of those two things, it has to be multiplied. So then it becomes 1 chance in 36 that you could roll the die 2 times and come up with the exact number you wanted both times. And if you did it 3 times, then you multiply 6 times 6 times 6. And you can see that in very short order, the numbers are astronomical. They become incomprehensible. And probability is used by all insurance companies, and it's used in all different areas of science, and it works. And when you see some of the insurance policies and different things that are taken out, and the kind of money that goes in and the money that goes out, it may seem at first glance like those companies are taking a chance. The chance is virtually non-existent. They know what they're doing, and it's all based in probability. They really know that this thing works. So the key thing, though, is as you're dealing with these different facets, you multiply. You don't add it up. You multiply one facet by the next, by the next, by the next. Now, how does this apply to Bible prophecy? The liberals and other unbelievers say that men wrote the Bible. They say that it wasn't God, it was man. They say man does not have foreknowledge. And I would agree, man doesn't, but God has plenty of it. So, as man wrote, all he could do was guess at the future. That's all he could do. Can only do one thing, that's guess. Or, as a lot of them try to prove, he wrote after the event. But one very interesting thing, when you consider the over 300 prophecies of Christ in the Old Testament, because of the Septuagint, where you have the Hebrew Old Testament translated into Greek, which was done in 275 B.C., or 285 B.C., it proves absolutely that those prophecies were written a long time before Christ. So that's just one major area right there. Now, what we want to look at is in the book of Ezekiel. We're going to take one prophecy here, and we're going to talk about this and see just how amazingly these prophecies have come to pass. This is in Ezekiel chapter 26, verses 3 to 21. This is concerning the destruction of Tyre, the city of Tyre. Ezekiel chapter 26. Now, this prophecy was written 3 or more years before the destruction began. 3 or more years. And so as people have gone through and they've looked at this historically, they have been able to show and able to prove that this was written before the event. Now, really, that point only concerns the part that Nebuchadnezzar played in this prophecy. And he plays a fairly prominent role, but it's not really the major role, because there's other nations and other people involved. Now, the prophecy contains the following points. Number one, Nebuchadnezzar would take the city of Tyre. He would take that city. That's noted in verses 7 and 10. Nebuchadnezzar would take the city of Tyre. The second point is that other nations would participate in fulfilling this prophecy. Other nations would participate in fulfilling this prophecy. That's mentioned in verse 3. He says, "It will cause many nations to come up against thee." Many different nations. The third point is that the city will be made flat like the top of a rock. The city will be made flat like the top of a rock. Now, this is extremely unusual. Most cities that are taken end up being inhabited. But this city was going to be made absolutely flat. Literally. Verses 4 and 14. I don't know if there's a record of any other city having such a thing done to it. It's really an amazing point. The city would then become a place for the spreading of nets. Become a place where they spread nets, fishing nets. Verse 5, also verse 14. The next point is that the stones of the city, stones that were used to build the walls and other buildings, as well as the timbers of the city, would be laid in the sea. That's also unusual. That's in verse 12. Now, generally, you would use those stones either to rebuild something as well as the timber. It was good. It was very good material. To put it in the sea doesn't make any sense. The next point is that other cities would fear at the fall of Tyre, and they would open their gates without resistance. They would see what happened to Tyre, and because of that, they'd open their gates without resistance. Now, that's not so unusual. That's happened in other times in history. Verses 15 and 16. Verses 15 and 16. And then the last point is that the old city of Tyre would never be rebuilt. Nor would it ever be found again. It would not be rebuilt, nor would it even be found again. That's verses 14 and 21. Now let's explain what happened here. Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the king of Babylon, he began his siege in 585 BC. So he began to attack Tyre in 585. Now, after 13 years, and it was probably somewhat of an on-again, off-again battle. I don't think that it was necessarily 13 straight years. But after 13 years, he finally took the city. And that was in 573 BC. So in 573 BC. Now, when he got into the city, he was dumbfounded. Now, I do not know how all of this happened. Nobody does. We don't have a complete historical record of this. But it's one possibility as to where I said this may not have been a 13 straight year siege, but it might have been on again, off again. But when he came into the city, he found out that the city was almost totally empty. The people were not there. They were gone. He was a bit surprised. The majority of the population had moved by ship to an island that was 1.5 mile offshore. And they had been building a fortified city there during these 13 years. Now, I don't know how they did it all, but it's what happened. So they had a fortified city on this island, and they just finally, what it appears to be, when they got that city built so that it had sufficient fortification, they just more or less opened the gates to the city of Tyre and let Nebuchadnezzar come in because they were 1/2 mile away. That's what happened. It's really an amazing thing. It's very amazing. Now, the mainland city of Tyre was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. He was very upset by this. And he spent 13 years, and he gets into the city, and the people are all gone. That has to be rather frustrating. And this is exactly what happened historically. It really happened. It's not make-believe. And this fulfills verse 7, where he destroys the city of Tyre. But it's the mainland city of Tyre. Notice the people, they're not conquered. And the island city remained powerful for several hundred years. See, God is saying here in this prophecy that he will destroy Tyre because of their ungodliness, because of their pride. They're going to be destroyed. But he says many nations will be involved. You'd think any time that Nebuchadnezzar would be involved, that would be sufficient. But it wasn't sufficient. It wasn't enough. Now, for 241 years, so from 573, for 241 years, the mainland and the island city of Tyre remained just as Nebuchadnezzar had left them. Nothing more happens, other than Tyre just remains strong, remains very powerful. And the next person to come along is Alexander the Great. And this happens after Alexander had defeated Darius of Persia at the Battle of Issus. Darius of Persia at the Battle of Issus in 333 BC. And he marched southward toward Egypt. So he defeated Darius, and then he was going to go to Egypt. And as he was passing through this part of the land there, he would call on the various cities for them to open their gates. And the city of Tyre was well known out on this island. And he also demanded that they would open their city to him. They said, no way. They said, we're not going to do it. Well, Alexander was a bit of an egotist, and he did not appreciate this. And he used captured fleets to go against Tyre. Captured some fleets, and he was going to go out there and take Tyre. But he wasn't able to do it. So what he did is he more fully demolished the old city of Tyre. See, they never moved back to the mainland city. They just stayed out on the island. So he more fully demolished that old city of Tyre, and he worked to build a causeway out to that island. So he'd have a land access to the island. That's what he worked to do. So he took all the debris from the destroyed city and started piling it into the sea. Now, we could describe the island city of Tyre as an Alcatraz-type city. It was out there on this island, out in the middle of the water. So kind of like Alcatraz Prison, out in the middle of San Francisco Bay. And it was surrounded by very large and powerful walls. And I would imagine that during this period of 241 years, they have continued to fortify the city. They've continued to build it up. And the walls came more or less right down to the edge of the sea. So there wasn't any way to sail up to sandy beaches and gain any sort of a beachhead. They couldn't do that. He came sailing up to this island, and what do you have? These big, massive walls. That's not the way to be victorious when these people are throwing things off the walls and shooting arrows. And it's pretty hard to take a city in that kind of a situation, especially when you're coming up in boats and it's all unsteady. And how are you going to set up a ladder? How are you ever going to get over the wall? You're not going to do much. So that's why he recognized, I've got to build some sort of a land access to this city. And you say, well, why would he even take the time? Well, I think there's two reasons. Number one, the kind of person he was. He couldn't stand to have these people of Tyre scorn him, ridicule him, ignore him, and whatever else they did to him. He couldn't stand that. And number two, God was putting it in his heart to judge the people of Tyre. And I don't think Alexander even recognized that he was being used by God to bring judgment on these people. I don't think he knew he was doing that in the slightest. But I'm convinced that that's part of the reason why he was doing this. Now, at first, the work on the causeway went pretty well. But as the people of Tyre could see this causeway getting closer and closer to their island, they stepped up harassment. And they were not going to put up with this causeway being built. This is leading to their doom. And so as the depth of the sea increased, and as the people of Tyre continued their harassment, the job became more and more difficult. And occasionally the people of Tyre would stage raids on the causeway, and that greatly retarded the progress. So finally, Alexander had to build big defense towers on the causeway itself to protect the causeway so that they wouldn't come and destroy it. So this is quite a military struggle here. Now, in one attack, the people of Tyre made fire ships, set ships on fire, to start the towers burning. Then they swarmed the causeway, routing the Greeks. They destroyed a great amount of the causeway. And so Alexander just went home. No, that's not what he did. He got more upset. Alexander then obtained more ships for protection, and also more ships so that when he had opportunity, he was going to conquer that city. Now, the causeway was still incomplete, and the building materials were almost gone. So what's he going to do? He's got to find more supplies. So he literally scraped all the soil. He scraped everything of the old city of Tyre into the water until you were down to bedrock. That's what he did. Now you can imagine he had quite a few slave laborers doing this. It would not have been a very pleasant task. And with these more ships and the greater determination, the causeway was finally done. And mainland Tyre was simply a rock, just like the Bible said it would be. And then after a seven-month siege with fleets and troops aided by the causeway, Tyre was finally taken in 332 BC. So he was, see, Alexander was a tremendous soldier. And when he set his mind, he was generally going to be very successful. And so he was. Now this caused the nations and the cities round about to be very fearful. Yeah.
It only took him 1 year?
Yep. That's all it took him.
Build that. Yep.
That was it. This man was dedicated. 332. And this Alexander, he was determined. He was dedicated. That's why he conquered the known world. He was a debauched man, but he knew how to wage military warfare. He knew how to do it. Now, 8,000 people of Tyre were killed, and 30,000 were sold into slavery. 8,000 killed, 30,000 sold into slavery. This fulfills verses 3, 4, 12, also verses 14 to 16. 3, 4, 12, 14 to 16. Now, in verse 3 it says that he will cause many nations to come against thee. Now, with Nebuchadnezzar and Alexander, we still only have partial fulfillment. Because Alexander left the city of Tyre there. And after he had more or less subjugated them, and he killed the number that I mentioned and sold the 30,000 to slavery, but that's not all the people of Tyre. It was a larger city than that. And after he gets done taking the city, he still is going to go to Egypt. So he's headed right off to Egypt. And he doesn't really stay there to keep them as a tributary. And in short order, they have gained strength back up. And we find that sometime around 314 B.C., a man named Antigonus, A-N-T-I-G-O-N-U-S, he took Tyre once again. And he had to overcome some resistance, but he was able to take the city. And you see, from 332 to 314, the island city had recovered rapidly. So in those 18 years, it had become very strong again. And this particular siege lasted 15 months. And then it finally fell again. And then we go a long ways in time to 1047 A.D. And the historians speaking of the city of Tyre at that time said that it was built on a rock and it extended into the sea. And they said the walls are of hewn stone, so cut out stone. And they said that it was a small city in area, but it possessed great wealth. So Tyre still exists. And this prophecy has not been fulfilled. And it was held in renown by other maritime cities because of its power and its wealth. So that's in 1047. It's historians at that time. Now later, the city is captured by the Muslims. And then it's captured by the Crusaders during the Holy Wars, where the Roman Catholic Church with Charlemagne and others made effort to take the Holy Land from the Muslims. And so this was then during that time of the Crusades, it was used as a key base, and it was actually used during that time. And in about 1291 AD, the Muslims retook the city. So in about 1291 AD, the Muslims retook the city, and they destroyed it fully by the sword and by fire. They destroyed it fully. They massacred the population. They took the rest of the people into slavery. So they massacred a large portion of the population. The rest of the people they took into slavery. The city was demolished and it was left in ruins. And it has remained in ruins ever since. That was from 1291 A.D. So this shows many different nations came against Tyre over a very long period of time. Nebuchadnezzar, Alexander, Antigonus, the Muslims, the Crusaders, and then the Muslims once again. Now, Tyre is still in use today as a small fishing port where small fishing vessels lay at anchor. And this port today is a haven for fishing boats. So talking about Tyre today, and that's the mainland area and then this causeway area, this island. And it has become a place for the spreading of nets. And they're spread on the causeway for drying. They're spread there. And the nets being spread fulfills verses 5 and 14. And it's exactly what happens there. Now, this small village upon the site of the ancient city does not mean that the prophecy is not fulfilled. But it is the final confirmation that it is fulfilled. Because how else are you going to have the spreading of these fishing nets? You've got to have fishing boats. You've got to have a fishing village. You've got to have something like that there, or else how can you spread fishing nets? Now, Tyre, that was known as the mistress of the seas, the trade and commercial center of the world for centuries, passed away never to rise again. It doesn't exist today. There is a city of Tyre today, but it's built down the coast from the original site. It's not on the original site. Old Tyre, except for the small fishing village, stands today as a bare rock. That's how it stands, a bare rock. And that's just the way it was 25 centuries ago when Alexander scraped it clean. He scraped the whole thing clean. Not quite 25 centuries, but thereabouts. The original Tyre does not exist. And that which covers a small portion of the ancient site, fulfills key parts of the prophecy, that small city, that little village, is no more old Tyre than it is any other big city. It's just a small little village. The old city site can be pointed out, can point that out, but there's not a single ruin to mark the spot. This has all been scraped into the sea. Not a single ruin. It's talking about the land, mainland city of Tyre. It was scraped clean and never rebuilt. That fulfills verses 4 and 14. Scraped clean and never rebuilt. Verses 4 and 14. Remember that the fishing village is part of the prophecy. For if fishermen are going to spread their nets on the ancient site, they certainly aren't going to live 25 miles away to do so. They're going to live where their nets are. So don't be stumbled at that. Well, yeah, there is a village there. That's the old city of Tyre. That's not the old city of Tyre. The old city of Tyre was the mistress of the seas. That little fishing village has no power, no renown, no prestige whatsoever. Another interesting point is that on the site of ancient Tyre, there are fresh water springs, and they are called the Rezelein Springs, R-E-S-E-L-A-I-N, Rezelein, which produces 10 million gallons of pure water daily. Now, that is plenty for a large modern city. There's a good harbor, and there's good bedrock for homes and for buildings to be erected on. But there is no city. Why isn't there a city? Because God said there wouldn't be. And nobody can build the city. I'm sure people have had the idea we should build there. But it all comes to naught. Why? Because God said nobody would. God can keep man from doing that. You don't find that city nation of Tyre with its power, its prestige, and its wealth. It's not found. It doesn't exist. Obviously, the site is known. So the Holy Ghost is not saying you won't know where it was. He's not saying that. See, God's not stupid. God's not going to say something. You're not going to know the city, and everybody knows where it was. And God says, oh, sorry, what was I saying? I should have known better. He's got to be saying something more than you won't know the site. You're going to know the site. There it is. What does he mean that it won't be found again? Where is it? Where is the city of Tyre? Where is that city with power and wealth and prestige and world renown? Where is it? Can't find it. Non-existent. Does not exist. As a living, active, hustling, bustling city, it's never been found again. Can't find it. And the ruins of the mainland city have been cast into the sea. You don't even see the ruins. Now, there's aspects of this that we just don't know about. We don't know how it all happened. We don't have the historical detail of all of it. But as far as the scholars are concerned, they know the main points, and that's what I've given you, and you can do more research if you so desire. But there's no question that these things have come to pass just like the Bible said. And nobody can refute it. Nobody can refute it. Totally impossible. Now, let's see here. Let's go through and evaluate this prophecy. We'll go through and evaluate this. And we're going to take the evaluation that is given in the book Science Speaks by a man named Peter Stoner. Science Speaks. And in the book Evidence That Demands a Verdict, he quotes a man who makes a statement about Science Speaks. And this man is Harold Hartzler, who has a PhD. He's the Secretary Treasury of the American Scientific Affiliation of Goshen College in Indiana. And this is in the foreword of Peter Stoner's book, and it says, the manuscript for Science Speaks has been carefully reviewed by the committee of the American Scientific Affiliation members and by the executive council of the same group, and has been found in general to be dependable and accurate in regard to the scientific material presented. The mathematical analysis included is based upon principles of probability which are thoroughly sound, and Professor Stoner has applied these principles in a proper and convincing way. So this just lends credibility to Science Speaks. It's a very credible book. And this is his evaluation of this prophecy. Now, the first aspect of Tyre being a very strong city, and that it would hold fast when other cities fell, and Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't be able to take it, we'll rate that as a probability of 1 chance in 3, which is pathetically ridiculous, but nevertheless. Because Nebuchadnezzar might have tried and succeeded. He might have tried and failed, which in fact, that's what he did. He tried and failed. Or he might have not tried at all. So it's just 1 out of 3. But that's so absurd. 1 in 3 is so low, but we'll just leave it at that. you can make these probabilities in all these cases totally ridiculous, so low that it's just foolish. But by the time you get done, you still have numbers that are beyond comprehension. And it's just proving that these prophecies were written by God, who knows what he's talking about. Now, the second point is that other nations would be involved. You would think Nebuchadnezzar would be enough, but he wasn't enough. And so the probability for this was given as 1 in 5. One chance in five, which I think, again, is extremely low. It's more like 1 in 10,000 that Nebuchadnezzar would have ever failed. Here's the world power. Here's little city of Tyre. How could that little city of Tyre withstand Nebuchadnezzar? Jerusalem couldn't. Other major cities couldn't. But Tyre did. Tyre outfoxed Nebuchadnezzar. Well, that just seems impossible. That's like talking about how the city of Babylon would fall in one night. It fell in one night. That is just absolutely impossible. But it happened. If somebody was involved in, I had some bookie there in ancient times, and they were betting on the odds of Babylon ever falling, boy, the odds would have been from here to the moon. And it would have been a sure thing that the city could never be taken. It was taken in one night. It's absolutely incredible. A third point is that the city would be scraped bare. Now, as far as I know, this is unique in history, to have a whole city scraped into the ocean. How would Ezekiel know that Tyre was going to move to an island and then a causeway would be needed to get to the island? See, how could Ezekiel know such a thing? The probability for this that is given is 1 in 500. It's more like 1 in 500,000. It just didn't happen. There's no historical record for it. The fact that nets are spread there, that's given as 1 in 10. Most of these probabilities are just kind of arbitrary. Extremely low and just arbitrarily given. Then for the stones and the timbers to be placed in the sea for the causeway, this again is not the normal procedure. The various things of the city were usually saved for reuse. So again, the probability 1 in 10. That other cities would fear this, he gives 1 in 5. Some people could say, well, it's 1 in 2. Either they're going to fear or they're not going to fear, but that's even making it more absurd. For the city to never be rebuilt on a good site, to my mind, is like 1 in 1,000,000, but he just gives 1 in 20. So you end up with 1 in 3, 1 in 5, 1 in 500, 1 in 10, 1 in 10, 1 in 5, and 1 in 20, which comes out to 1 chance in 75 million, or 7.5 times 10 to the 7th power. So 75 million. 1 chance in 75 million. That's pretty amazing. Now, this is only one prophecy. Now, would you bet against the lake of fire if the chance of you being right is only 1 in 75 million? You wouldn't bet. Nobody would. Nobody. There's not a gambler, there's not an insurance man, there's not a corporation president that would ever do anything with that kind of a number. I mean, that is total certainty. That's just one prophecy. Now, when we deal with the mathematical probability that the Bible is God's word, based on prophetic accuracy, you have to start dealing with all the prophecies. What kind of numbers do you get then? They're just fantastic. Now, when science speaks, as well as in evidence that demands a verdict, there are 11 other prophecies that are considered. And I'm going to just give you these and the probabilities. And you might just more or less get the scripture and the probability and then fill in whatever you can later. The first one is the one that we just looked at, the city of Tyre. Ezekiel chapter 26, verses 3-21. And that's one chance in 7.5. And all of these are going to be one chance in. So I'll write these up on the board. One chance in. And the first one is 7.5 times 10 to the 7th. The second one involves Samaria. That's Micah 1 and verse 6. And this is one chance in 4.0 times 10 to the 4th. That involves Samaria, Micah 1, 6. The next involves Gaza, G-A-Z-A, and Ashkelon. This is Zephaniah chapter 2, verses 4 and 6. Also Amos 1, verse 8, and Jeremiah 47, verse 5. And he gives the probability for this one chance in 1.2 times 10 to the 4th. The next is the city of Jericho, Joshua 6, verse 26. Joshua 6, verse 26. He gives that one chance in 2.0 times 10 to the 5th. This just means that you have the 2, and 10 to the 5th means that you're going to have 5 zeros after it. Just means it goes out 5 places. Then he also evaluates what he labels as the Golden Gate, mentioned in Ezekiel chapter 44, verses 1 to 3. Ezekiel 44, verses 1 to 3, and he says that this is one chance in 10 to the 3rd. We're just dealing with those three verses, one chance and 10 to the 3rd. And then he gives Zion being plowed up. This is in Micah 3 and verse 12. And he says that this is one chance in 10 to the 2nd. So Micah 3 verse 12, one chance in 10 to the 2nd. So this is just one chance in 1,000. This is one chance in 100. Then Jerusalem being enlarged, Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 38 to 40. Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 38 to 40. And he says that this is one chance in 8.0 times 10 to the 10th. 8.0 times 10 to the 10th. If you had that much money, you wouldn't have anything to worry about. The next one involves Palestine, Leviticus chapter 26, Leviticus 26 verses 31 to 33, also Ezekiel chapter 36 verses 33 to 35, and he gives one chance in 2.0 times 10 to the 5th, 2.0 times 10 to the 5th. The next involves Moab and Ammon, Jeremiah 48, verse 47. Also Jeremiah 49, verse 6. Also Ezekiel chapter 25, verses 3, 4, 9, and 10. One chance in 10 to the 3rd. The next one is Edom, which is number 10. And that's Jeremiah chapter 49, verses 16 to 18. Jeremiah 49, verses 16 to 18. And this is one chance in 10 to the 4th. One chance in 10 to the 4th. I'll read a statement about this in just a moment, which is kind of interesting. And then the last one is Babylon, Isaiah chapter 13, verses 19 to 21. Also Jeremiah chapter 51, verses 26 and 43. And he says this is one chance in 5.0 times 10 to the 9th. Now, the total probability of these 11 prophecies, if written by human wisdom, is one chance in 5.76 times 10 to the 59th power. This is writing the number 576 followed by 57 zeros, which is a sizable number. Now, in Evidence That Demands a Verdict, he makes a statement concerning the prophecy about Edom in Jeremiah 49, which is number 10 here. And this is what he says. This is an Evidence That Demands a Verdict. I don't have the page number, but he says, Peter Stoner finds a great probability against the accurate human prediction of just three of the prophecies. The probabilities for the fulfillment of these different items were estimated as follows. For the Edom prophecies, dealing with Edom. Number one was 1 in 10 for Edom being conquered. It was also 1 in 10 on the subsequent desolation. And then it was 1 in 100 on never being re-inhabited. This gives a probability for the whole prophecy of 1 in 10 to the 4th. That would be 1 in 10,000. Many probably realize that this estimate of prophecy is difficult to grasp. See, these things are hard to grasp. We're given all this information, it's hard to do much with it. So what we're going to do here in reading this and noting something else, we'll try to visualize it. It'll make a little bit better impact. So it's difficult to grasp. The best course of action is to bring it closer to home. Edom was about 60 miles wide and about 110 miles long. This rectangular-shaped kingdom was roughly 6,600 square miles. The state of New Jersey is about 7,500 square miles. So we've got the state of New Jersey, so that's a little bit bigger. Consider this prediction. See, what if it came, thus saith the Lord, concerning New Jersey? New Jersey will become desolate. It will never be re-inhabited after it is conquered. It will be invaded by men of the east across the sea. It will also be conquered by men of the north. It will have an even bloodier and more corrupt future than any other nation in the United States of America. It will be totally destroyed up to Philadelphia. The site of the old kingdom will be infested with wild animals and beasts. And that make quite an impact if you heard thus saith the Lord, and then it happened. So there's this big area, the United States, and it's obliterated more or less. If one were to predict this today, he would either be mocked, ignored, or locked up. That's what would happen. It sounds ridiculous. See, if you had a prophecy like that, it sounds totally absurd. 300 million to one would be conservative. Say, boy, that's one chance in 300 million. I think that people in Las Vegas and elsewhere would say, no, it's like more, like one in 5 trillion or something. But yet that is roughly what happened in real life to Edom. Edom was populous and powerful. Israel was broken and captive in Babylon. And it was Ezekiel who made prophecies too fantastic to be true, yet they have come true. The grim reality is staring us in the face. The prophecy is real. God's wrath is real. Ezekiel is real. And the ruins of Petra, which speaks of Edom, are very real. See, that's what proves it. Those ruins prove it concerning Edom. So that's what he says there. Okay, let's talk about this number, 1 in 5.76 times 10 to the 59th. In Science Speaks, he rounds it off conservatively to 5 times 10 to the 59th. So he takes a little bit off of it. 5 times 10 to the 59th. Let's suppose we had this number of silver dollars. How many do we have besides lots? Let me tell you how many we have. Now, this is so incredible. I mean, I cannot even begin to comprehend this. This is dealing with 11 prophecies. Conservatively, we can make 10 to the 28th power solid silver balls, each the size of the sun. Now, you think about that. That's the truth. That is what you can do with this number of silver dollars. See, you cannot even fathom this number. See, this number is so incredible. You can't even begin to do anything with it. That's how big it is.
You said 10 balls plus some left over?
I'm not talking about 10 balls. 10 to the 28th power solid silver balls. That's one followed with 28 zeros. Solid silver balls. Solid. This is a big number. Now, you say that's incredible? It's not. That's what the number is. See? That's what the number is. See, we're talking about God writing this book. That's what we're talking about. See, you can't start counting to a million. I don't know how long it takes, but it takes a really long time. It takes years. Really? I don't know. I can't remember. I can't remember exactly what I read. Maybe it's not years, but it takes a really long time. It takes a month or a year or something. A million doesn't sound like that much, but you start counting to it. Try it. See how far you get just on the way home. I mean, a million is a big number. This number here is just so immense. It's phenomenal. Now realize that the sun is more than 1 million times larger than the earth. I mean, you'd have enough silver balls to buy whatever house you want and whatever car you want, that's for sure. Now this is all verified. See, now, when I read this in Science Speaks, I thought, well, boy, really? That's too much. But what lets me know that it's an accurate evaluation is the fact that Josh McDowell accepts it. Now, that's a key point. Because in Evidence That Demands a Verdict, that man has really worked to substantiate everything that he says. And he would not have this in his book unless it was accurate. And you better believe they used computers to do all of this. They didn't sit down with a slide rule, piece of paper, and a pencil to do this. Okay, our group of stars, the Milky Way galaxy, contains approximately 100 billion stars, each averaging the size of our sun. That's how big this galaxy is. It has been computed that if you were to count the 100 billion stars, counting 250 a minute, you're going to count these 100 billion stars at 250 a minute. That's really counting. You have to count fast to count to 250 in a minute. It would take you 750 years counting day and night to count these 100 billion stars. It's going to take a long time. I don't think anybody's going to live long enough to be able to do that. Methuselah could have done it, but there's not too many that live the same age as Methuselah. It is estimated that there are approximately 2 trillion galaxies. That's what scientists say. Now, from our 5 times 10 to the 59th power silver dollars. Now, I know this is going to seem amazing, but this is what they say. I can't bear it. I can't prove it to you. I don't got a computer at home. I don't got a computer up here that'll do me much good either. We can make all the stars in these 2 trillion galaxies. Now, remember how many stars are in the galaxies. See? It says you got 2 trillion galaxies. Each is about 100 billion stars. And you can make these 2 trillion galaxies how many times? 200,000 times. That's what you can do. See? So you've got... with these silver dollars. So you got with these silver dollars. This is how much you can do. So you're taking these silver dollars, you can make these 2 trillion galaxies that have 100 billion stars each 200,000 times. Now that's what it works out by just taking the data. I mean, it's an incredible thing. Now, And that's just part of this. I'll give you the rest of it next week. But who wrote the book? Who wrote the book? Who prophesied these things? It's not Gene Dixon. Like Russ McKenzie mentioned last night, Jacqueline Kennedy will never get married, and the next day she got married. I mean, that just proves that these demons are not that smart. They make some big mistakes. There's not one prophecy in this book that you can prove to be false. Every single one that's already happened historically is totally accurate. Every single one. Every single detail. Every single point. God told him, he said, if a man stands up and says, thus saith the Lord, it doesn't come to pass, I want you to take him out and kill him. Take him out and stone him. Now, see, God's pretty confident that if he gives you something to say, it's going to come to pass. But if God isn't feeding your mind, you better not open your mouth for 1 second. It's incredible. See, it doesn't do justice. I always feel like, well, okay, I gave you that data, and we go through an amazing prophecy about the city of Tyre. It doesn't really sink in at first. But when you start to deal with the numbers that are involved, well, at least then it starts to make some sort of an impact. But even at that, it's just so incredible. You need a lot more than just the data of this class. We need the Spirit of God to really give us revelation so that we know this is God's Word. You can base your whole life on this and never be disappointed. It's really an amazing thing. Well, we'll continue next week. You do need to be studying for a test. We will have a test covering everything up to the section on the Bible proving to be inspired. So the fact that it seems to be and the fact that it claims to be. Those two first sections we will have a test on. We might have it next week. Then again, we might not. Just be studying.
Maybe zero. I use this to Mark, too. I think you might enjoy it for this class. Here's an authenticated account of a man being swallowed by a whale.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And he lived. It was recorded by a doctor.
That's amazing.
And I thought maybe you might like to have it.
Well, sure.
1891. And it's three different men have been swallowed up, and two of them didn't quite make it, but this one guy did.
Ah, amazing.
So you can give that back when you get a chance.
Okay.
I'll go for Jonah.
That's good. Hey, I don't know if you've seen this thing, but one time I found these papers, you know, and it was saying how they did these things on the prophecies of Christ, you know, and it said like there's like 333 of them. I don't know if this number was right because it didn't sound as big as yours, but it was saying it was like after they calculated them coming through, they said it was like covering the state of Texas and put a silver dollar and sticking out the right one, you know? Have you read that?
No, I haven't seen that, but
kind of like a paper or something.
Well,
everybody else
is flying
out. I don't know. It might depend on the calculation. Some of the probability issues, but whatever the case is, the point is that there is no way, no matter how you calculate it, that it's man who wrote it. There's no way. But, you know, this is just absolutely incredible. And it seems like it's got to be too much. And you're dealing with a fantastic number. And oh, that we would that we'd ever doubt that.
I know.
It does. It shows that the devil he's robbed us. He's confused us. But I'm sure glad that God keeps his grace and his mercy toward us.
Followed your advice here. Oh, it works out real good.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think we're going to get another job tomorrow. We're going to split up me and Mike and get a bigger
test. Well, that's
good. It's good. So, isn't it? Went out to get some tattoos and I see this job, you know. And
that's right.
Poor Emil guy out there trying to stick in and tell me to own the place and wanted me to come out. Some guy's way behind.
Sounds good.
We're going to go up there and turn them on and see if we can get them.
That's good. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
What do you need, friend?
Before I go, I want to pray for you. Oh, please.
Oh.
seven brothers that come before the Lord and had this ailment to be from just for a few years. I'm not going to suggest I'm interfere with his today. He has the power and authority to be reproduced.
Amen. Amen.
We appreciate our teachers so much.